Welcome back to the Macro Golf Podcast. Joe and Sam here from Macro Golf. We just wanted to start this episode by letting you know about the Macro Golf app. Now, if you're enjoying all of the content on golf fitness and performance, and you want to start getting into action and actually starting to perform some of these tasks, then the Macro Golf app is where you need to be. Sam's going to let you know everything that the Macro Golf is going to include for you.
We have over 150 mobility videos, 20 plus different training programs, 250 exercise library videos, our golf swing speed training plans, tons of different flow routines, our golf fitness journal, plus tons more. If you guys do want to take advantage of this for our podcast listeners, we're going to give our 10% off. So if you go to macrogolfonline.co.uk/app, click sign up and enter the code podcast10. You'll get 10% off there, and we hope you like it.
Yeah, let's get into today's episode. Guys, welcome back to the Macro Golf Podcast. Today, slightly different episode for us because we're going to talk specifically about nutrition, but a little bit away from what we like to talk about, which is, you know, habits and nutrition and lifestyle and that stuff, and actually thinking a little bit more about performance and thinking about what you guys can eat on the golf course to optimize your performance and basically shoot lower scores through what you're eating, drinking, or what you're not eating and drinking, which is often sometimes the problem with a lot of conversations that I have with my clients. So we've got Sam back with us today. Sam, how are we doing?
All good. I'm looking forward to this one because we're playing golf this afternoon, so we can put these straight to the test.
Yeah, and I'm hungry as well, so it's a really good really good combo coming up. So this sparked from some questions I get on Instagram. I quite often get asked, you know, what should I eat on the golf course, or what's the best thing to eat on the golf course? And I realized that I'm actually quite maybe a little bit too kind of open with my answer, and I kind of say, well, kind of eat what you would normally eat, but just make these changes for the golf course. But after some feedback, we decided to be a little bit more specific and actually give you guys some actual things you can go away and put into action with a little bit more guidance. So that's the plan for today. Hopefully off the back of today's episode, you kind of know exactly what your requirements are going to be for you to eat and drink the right things next time you're out, and what changes to make depending on time of day or weather or that type of stuff. So Sam's not even prepared for this, but I'm going to throw it straight at him. Sam, what do you normally eat during a round of golf? What would we typically find in your golf bag if we always go out and play?
So typically I'm quite receptive to carbs. So typically I'll try to avoid carbs out on the course, especially at kind of halfway. It just gives me a massive drop off for probably like 20, 30 minutes afterwards. So typically I will have in my bag huge 2-liter bottle of water that's probably got some electrolyte tablet in, all my vitamins and things like that. I'll have a protein supplement, so either that's going to be a protein shake or a protein bar, and then I'll have a couple of pieces of fruit, whether that's banana, apple, and actually one of my favorites is a couple of baby bells as well, so a little bit of cheese as well.
Oh, good shout.
Yeah I don't like to have anything kind of more substantial than that. I just, years and years of training after lunch and things like that, I just know what my body can digest pretty quickly and kind of still perform at, and still, for me as well, for carbs, it's more of a mental focus thing. I just find like, I just get really like weary and unfocused and lethargic, which is not what I want.
Interesting, because I'm the complete opposite. So that's why this week probably have quite a fun episode. Absolute carb fiend. Like I just, bread.
Well, I know. I've been in the studio with you, and you whip out at lunchtime. You just get a baguette out.
Yeah, like no butter. Just straight in. That's come from me being a kid when I used to go around Tesco's and just grab baguettes and sat in the little trolley running. just eat bread with no butter, nothing. So I'm an absolute carb animal. And I'm the opposite to what you've just said there. I basically cannot function correctly without carbs, without bread, without any of that stuff. And this is where I think this episode is going to be an interesting one, because I do believe that everyone will be different and everyone responds different to their food, which is kind of why my response when people ask me is a little bit more brief. But I think we can start to identify there are some general rules that you can follow that are going to help you. For example, you mentioned there with the water. I think for everyone, they need to be drinking a decent amount of water on the golf course, especially in the warmer weather. And as you mentioned there, like avoiding a little bit more of a spike and then a crash is also going to be some good advice for people. So just understanding their body. But for me, for example, you'll definitely find some form of bread 100% in the bag. Most likely a hot cross bun, which I'm sure most people in America probably don't know what that is. And again, protein. But for me, that's mostly because I just try and have some form of protein every kind of 3 to 4 hours anyway. So if I'm out for that amount of time, chances are that would fit within kind of that sequence that I would be in anyway. Probably banana, like you said there, a bit of fruit, maybe like some kind of like cereal bar or some kind of like bar like that. So yeah, we're probably not too far away from each other. I'd probably just eat all the bread and you just don't have any of the bread.
So the thing is, I've had all the bread before. You know what I mean? I tend to, just with my nutrition anyway, not go too carb heavy at lunch. So typically I'll get them all in the morning and a lot in the, at night. I just try to avoid it at lunch because I know it just gives me a massive crash. To be fair, the hot cross buns, you know, we're both very partial to hot cross buns. So yeah.
I would say I keep your hot cross bun market alive outside of Easter.
Yeah.
I'm buying hot cross buns in August. okay, so the point that we're trying to get at is that there's going to be a huge different variety in what you can have. And although there is some general rules that we will talk about today that are good things to follow, there's also going to be personal preference, time of day, weather, all these things that are going to change. So I suppose just assuming that, you know, seeing on TV, seeing what someone eats, that's probably not going to be maybe the best thing for you. So having your own plan and understanding your own body and making adjustments on the day and time of day and your body is going to be the best way of doing it, as is anything, right? As is our training, as is our mobility, as is our habits, anything we do, we need to have our own personal approach to that. So if we were to kind of talk about time of day first, because I think it's quite an important one. Obviously, you could tee off in this time of year, you could tee off at 6 o'clock in the morning, you could tee off at 6 o'clock at night. Obviously, that is going to change the requirements of nutrition for you during that round of golf. What are some things you would consider, Sam, if you were to tee off, for example, if you were to tee off at 6 in the morning compared to if you were going to tee off at 6 in the evening, what would be some considerations you might make to the food that you take out? Would that, what you've just described there, would that be, I know typically you play like late morning or early afternoon, but what would be changed on what you've just described there based on time of day? What different considerations would you potentially make there?
Well, we'll definitely start off by adding some caffeine in there if I'm teeing off at 6 in the morning. Typically, I'd like to wait an hour and a half, so 90 minutes after I've woken up before I have any caffeine anyway, but that's just a bit more of a research based on caffeine and stop getting you the tiredness once that caffeine wears off anyway. What else would I change there? I probably would have to add in a bit more kind of substantial. So I might swap out my protein shake for maybe a not a meal replacement shake, but one of the protein shakes that just has a lot more carbs, a lot more calories to it. I would still probably not try to eat as much. I'd probably try and liquefy it instead, just in terms of ease and walking around the course, taking a few sips every couple of holes. It's just much easier to get around that way. And then the only other thing I'd have a much higher focus on hydration. But then again, that just goes to my daily kind of practices of when I like to get in my water. I typically try and have two liters before 12 o'clock, and a lot of that for me is done quite early on in the morning. So I would probably just focus a little bit more on the hydration side there.
So I suppose what you're saying is the fact that you're teeing off at 6 o'clock wouldn't change what you're eating. It's just that what you would normally eat early in the morning would then start to filter across into the golf course, right? So
yeah.
I suppose what we're doing is we're really trying not to vary too much away from our typical eating habits, 100%. Or typical for you caffeine habits or typical hydration habits. And I think that's really important, because what you sometimes see is you see people say, oh, you know, I'm teeing off early in the morning, so I've got to get up and make sure I have a really big breakfast before I go. I was like, well, for me, for example, I don't really eat anything typically until like 10 or 10:30 in the day anyway, just for what I prefer to do. So if I was to wake up at 5 in the morning, I mean, good luck trying to get me up at 5 in the morning, but if I was to wake up at 5 in the morning and have a huge breakfast before I went out and played 6, my body would be all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely.
It would feel weird. It would feel sluggish because it would be confused of what's going on. And that's obviously not going to be in a prime position to then play for my best ability. Exactly. So if my body's not used to eating anything that time of the morning, it might be that I need to bring that forward a little bit with the fact that I've woken up a little bit earlier and different bits. But it's probably still not going to want to eat anything that early in the morning, even if I'm out.
I'd say my first bit of advice is try to stick to your kind of normal nutritional habits as closely as possible, just so you aren't sending your body into a shock and it's digesting things differently and you might need to go to the toilet when you don't and anything like that. So like you said, if you normally, I've got clients that typically miss breakfast or do different fasting windows and stuff, your body's still going to be able to perform at a certain level, right? Unless you're playing back-to-back-to-back rounds and you feel malnourished and things, then we might need to look at changing it. But if you're not seeing a drop-off in performance and you're keeping your habits the same, that's perfect. That's what we need to do. You're going to keep the status quo of the body. Everything's going to tick over. Hopefully that's okay. I suppose the areas that we need to address more is for people that have poor nutritional habits, right? Like, what would you say they should be doing it for a morning round? They're getting up at, it's teeing off at 7, so.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think with all of this, we need to consider also what are the actual demands of golf, right? Like this, because whenever we talk about sport nutrition and what we're going to use to fuel that sport, we need to know what the demands are. And without going too geeky, we need to understand what the energy systems are, what does the body actually use to deliver that result in that sport, right?
Yeah.
And that's gonna be very different to if you're running a marathon, to if you're playing football, to if you're playing golf. The demands of what your body needs to generate that energy to perform that task is gonna be very different, and it uses a different system to do that. And in golf, we're pretty much two complete opposite ends of the spectrum. We're either walking around a golf course, which is one energy system on one complete end of that spectrum, or we're explosive moving in a movement that takes a second or less than a second, right?
Yeah.
So you're on the complete opposite ends of this energy system spectrum, and both ends require different stimulus, right? For example, walking around a golf course for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours probably requires a bit more of sustained nutrition. You might find that you don't feel tired immediately, but towards the end, you might start to get a little bit more fatigued if you've not had your correct nutrition.
Yep.
You might also find that you lose concentration, which will also be tied into that as well, which would affect that. But you probably wouldn't notice that for the first few holes, but that would be definitely noticed towards the last few holes.
Yeah.
Where, for example, if we've had, and again, this is where I'm getting a little bit into a bit of a sketchy zone, because nutrition really doesn't always have that much effect on our ultimate explosive power.
Yes.
Caffeine might have some effect, which also needs to be seen. Maybe we'll consider caffeine separately on its own. But really, if you've not eaten the best or eaten nothing at all, sometimes that ultimate power doesn't change that much. It's not that drastic.
No.
But you definitely notice if you're not eating anything towards the end of the round, you'll start to feel very, very fatigued, very, very sluggish, and very, very dull. Yeah. Now we get back to we do the full loop, and we're like, okay, if we're feeling sluggish and we're feeling dull, our mental fatigue is very, very high. Central fatigue very, very high, and that definitely affects our power.
There we go. Yeah.
So now we make a full cycle, right? And that affects our concentration, and we make poorer swings, we make sluggish things, we make poor decisions. So all of these things, although they're on complete opposite ends of the spectrum, always loop back round and become linked. And I know I went off a tangent to avoid your question, but I'll answer the question now. Is I think if someone generally has poor nutrition, their nutrition won't suddenly improve when they get to the golf course. I generally think that people's nutrition gets worse when they get to the golf course. There's more temptation to pick up different things. And I think that is a completely different problem that needs to be solved in a different way. I think you can use golfers as the motivators to make them make better food choices and say, look, if you've got better fuel in your body, you're going to perform better. But ultimately, there's probably some other habits there to be fixed. But what I often see is people's nutrition that is good then actually still becomes not great when they get to the golf course, if that makes sense. So I think it's almost irrelevant on how good your nutrition is away from the golf course. I think you still need to make good decisions and informed decisions when you're there.
Yeah, 100%. It's 100%. That makes sense. It's something I've had to pay more attention to, especially in periods when I'm trying to put on a bit more mass or things like that. I'll typically find that played golf for, say it's a slow round, you're out 5-6 hours, like that's a big window of not consuming any protein and hitting your goals. Like then you're playing catch up and then you might make some poor decisions throughout the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Typically you get that as well. You get fatigued towards the end of the rounds, you finish and you go straight into the clubhouse and you get an absolutely huge meal that you probably haven't burned off at all.
This is a great topic.
This is my favorite topic that I have with all my runners. So obviously when was the marathon? April, wasn't it? So a couple of months ago. Every time a year I pick up clients that have just run the marathon and have put on weight and are so confused why they've put on weight, even though they've done the most exercise they've ever done. It's like you've just really fatigued yourself. So then you think that you can eat absolutely anything you want. In reality, is really not the case. I think a marathon, the longest run they'll do would be the marathon. I think you burn 3,000 calories maybe, which actually isn't that hard to kind of reconsume. Training runs, 10Ks and stuff, you're not burning anywhere near that.
Yeah.
The kind of understanding of how hungry you are after a round, if you haven't eaten during the round, is much, much higher. And typically you see people consume more calories straight after that. Whereas if you'd been consuming some protein, carbs, fats during the round, keeping hydrated, you don't then come off thinking, right, I need to eat absolutely everything that's put in front of me.
Yeah. And I think that with golf, what I see with that is people would eat nothing out on the golf course.
Yeah.
Drink nothing on the golf course. Come off the golf course, absolutely crawl in, straight in the bar for a couple of pints after the round. And then maybe on the way home or at the golf course or whatever afterwards, completely overindulge.
Yeah.
And if you listen to this podcast and you care about your well-being and you care about being fit, healthy, looking good, feeling good and playing your best golf, then you probably understand that that's not going to be a good relationship to have with just complete starvation and then complete binge, right? Like yeah. That's kind of goes against everything we try and teach. And I wrote a blog post, probably about 2 years ago now. And the title of the blog post was, is golf a good way to lose weight? Because people would say, oh, you know, it must lose loads of weight playing golf. You know, walking all this time, playing this, whatever. I said, you only really need to go and look around a golf course and realize that most people there are overweight.
Yeah.
To realize that golf probably isn't a great way to lose weight because by the time you've eaten your breakfast at the golf course, eaten something halfway around the golf course, eaten around the golf course and had gone in a couple of beers at the end of the golf course, you've put weight back on more than what you burnt off when you were there.
You're in a surplus fairly easily.
Yeah.
I think golf is a great way to burn calories.
Correct.
Whether people then keep that off outside of that is a different question, right? And the answer is no.
Exactly. And this is where we get into the thing of temptations and opportunity and all these things. And unfortunately, you know, I love eating at golf clubs. I think it's amazing. But luckily I know how to kind of like navigate a menu to kind of take what I want. But there's a lot of temptation, right? There's a lot of temptation. It's basically like walking into a pub, really. And you go in it first and then you go and do some exercise and then you come back into the pub and the temptation is there, right? That's why it's not easy. And that's why a lot of members of golf clubs that are there very often that play 2-3 times a week are overweight because the temptation is huge at golf courses and they're definitely not set up for optimal sport performance.
It's not preparing for your rounds properly for your nutrition, and that's what we're saying. If you take some forms of protein, fats, carbs around with you, you're not going to get that feeling like you can't stand up straight afterwards. So you just get absolutely anything you want after the round.
Exactly, and this comes back to our podcast on nutrition, where we were talking about one of the key things is probably being organized and being prepared, and you know, thinking ahead with some stuff as well. Because if you're not prepared, you're going to have to make an impulse decision. You know, if you didn't take anything with you, you're going to be checking in the club shop, and you're going to see a Snickers there and a Lucas there. You'd be like, "That perfect."
And the clubs are smart, right? The chocolate bars are next to the cards. Do you know what I mean? They know exactly what they're doing. They know if someone's picking up a couple of pens or a couple of scorecards, they're going to grab a couple of chocolate bars. That's why they're there.
Always right, exactly. So just let's kind of maybe come back to what we would recommend. We would recommend taking things with you to the golf course. I know it's hard with golf when, you know, you're carrying a bag around and things can get destroyed, but some variation of carbohydrates, fats and proteins would be great. You know, sandwiches, bread rolls, whatever you like to eat would be really good. We're obviously both fans of protein supplements, and having easy ways of taking some kind of protein out with you would be great as well. And the biggest thing that I try and recommend to people is leave the sugary stuff to the last third of the round.
Towards the end, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. nothing wrong with taking a, you know, having a sugary Lucozade, having a sugary Snickers if you feel like you need it to get you through the last part of that round, but really try and leave that towards the last, you know, four holes, probably five holes is going to be good, just to give you that final boost for coming up the last few holes. As Sam said before, that he's quite sensitive with it. Most of us are sensitive with it as well. And if you do have that big sugar spike on the first couple of holes, you're just setting yourself up for a bit of a crash.
It's just an uphill battle afterwards, aren't you? You've got to either keep it going and just kind of consuming more and more sugar and more of that, or you just let it go and then struggle city for the rest of the round. For me, it's not quite even so much physical, it's just the mental concentration then seems to go. I find myself making poor decisions, hitting shots that I wouldn't have done normally.
Yes, and concentration becomes a huge part of golf towards the end of the round. Like, you know, and what we're trying to do on this podcast also is we're trying to just, as we've said before, we kind of talk about everything apart from the golf swing, all of the things that can affect your ability to shoot lower golf scores. And I think it's a big one. I do really believe that this is a big part of people being able to shave off 2-3 strokes towards the last 4-5 holes. Like, that's significant, right? We all go to a lot of work to shave off three shots off a handicap.
Yeah.
And if you get consistent with this and do it regularly, I do believe that can happen here. So, yeah. Nice. So I'm going to throw a question at you, Sam. No preparation. I've had no preparation. I just thought of the question. Top five golf snacks.
Oh, top five golf snacks. Right.
Tell me, your favorite. Top five.
My favorite. So definitely Babybel's going to be number one. I'm going straight in there.
You're not going five to four, five, four, three.
All right, I'll go for it. I've ruined it now.
Go five now. We'll do spoiler alert. Babybel's number one.
Number one. I'll go, right, number five, fruit.
Any specific fruit?
I will go banana.
Ooh, how are you protecting that banana from getting battered around?
See, I know this is where you're going to be all snobby because you've got your little banana protector, like you're still in primary school and mum's packed it for you.
Yep.
I've never had one of those, Joe. I've never been lucky enough to have a banana protector.
I'm going to buy you one from Amazon. For anyone who likes eating bananas, you can buy it.
So I do not have a
banana guard, I think. I think it's called banana guard.
I don't have a banana guard. I'm normally pretty strategic with how I try to pack in my bag and where I put things. So I typically, there's a pocket that tries to stay fairly unbruised. But you know what? I'm not a snob. I don't mind a bit of a bruised banana.
Sam, you've got to protect your banana.
We'll go five, banana. Number four, I'm going to go, bit of a guilty pleasure would be a Mars bar. I know we're talking about all this stuff, but Mars bars definitely, I don't tend to have them off a golf course. I don't know why. As soon as I get to playing golf, I'll always crave a Mars bar towards the end of a round. It's a bit of a reward for me. Number three, we're going to go, and I feel like I'm massively contradicting myself because I started off the podcast saying I didn't really have too much carbs on the course, but you've seen how many hot cross buns I have had as we go around, so I'll go hot cross bun number three.
Yep, great shout.
Number two is going to be a Connecticut Oreo protein bar. They are
the cooking cream one.
Cooking cream one. Sorry, they are unbelievable. Yeah, so easy to eat. Super high in protein, pretty low in sugar. Like they're sensational. One of my favorite protein bars. And then number one, as we've already kind of ruined, Babybel. Babybel Light, to be more specific. Same amount of protein as you get in an egg. Lots of good fats. Keep your carbs up. Keep your.
Do they not melt, do they, Babybel's?
They don't melt. They get a little bit softer, especially if it's hot.
Babybel's, I think, next round.
Honestly, for clients with nutritional problems who struggle to get protein in, Babybel's are my number one go-to. Like 6 grams of protein in a tiny little thing. Perfect.
I saw online the other day that I think they've, I don't know if you can get them in the UK, but you can get vegan Babybel's now.
Oh, can you?
Don't think it'd be any good. They're probably going to be coconut milk and probably be terrible. But for all of our vegan friends out there,
there you go. But that's my
dairy intolerant. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That would be my top five.
Nice.
Good mix of some little bit of guilty pleasure in there, but pretty much everything else is what I'd consume day to day, and just keeps me ticking over. Nice. Obviously, the one we haven't spoken about there, I end up drinking way, probably like double my daily intake for water than I normally do when I'm not playing golf, but I actually end up drinking way more. I end up probably having a couple hundred milliliters every couple of holes. It's just something I don't know if it's more of a mental check-in. I've kind of made it part of my process after holes, just to have some water, just to kind of reset things and go again. Obviously not a top five, but it's one of mine that's like a massive non-negotiable for when I'm out on the course.
Nice. Solid five.
Joe, hit me. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I'm going to go at five. Give me some kind of cereal bar. Some kind of cereal bar, a little bit of, like some kind of maybe peanut butter or peanut flavored cereal bar around that. Give me that at number five. At number four, I'm going to go with, I'm going to put the Snickers at number four.
Oh, two things. You're just trying to kill me. Business partners. I'm allergic to nuts. And the top two things, the first two things
you mentioned. I haven't got a pair. That's ideal for me. Give me the Snickers at number four. Give me the hot cross bun at number three.
Yep.
At number two, give me the Connecticut ready-to-drink protein shake.
Which one? Which flavor?
Vanilla flavor.
Yep.
And at number one, give me the banana in the banana guard.
Banana in the banana guard is number one.
Honestly, just banana on the golf course, so good. And obviously water as well for me. I like the with Connecticut, but Connecticut electrolyte vitamin C orange tablets. I'll always have one of them knocking about. I'm happy with that five, and wouldn't be afraid to have all five of those in the bag at the same time either.
Oh, 100%. In terms of like calories or feeling kind of bloated and stuff after the five that we've mentioned, it's not actually that much. Do you know what I mean? It's going to keep you satiated. It's going to keep you full and being able to perform, but you're not going to feel sluggish after that. And hopefully that's what we're trying to kind of get across to you guys listening today, that we're not saying don't eat. We're actually saying probably eat more than you're used to during the round, especially.
This is a great point. This is generally when people say about nutrition to me, I will be very shocked if they've listed out too much stuff. And I'm saying, oh my God, you're eating too much on the golf course. Generally, they're not eating enough. No. And they'll say, you know what? I'll take a little bit of water out with me, maybe a protein bar, maybe a handful of nuts or something. I'm like, you're probably either eating way more before or way more after.
100%.
To counteract that. And second of all, probably give yourself the opportunity to eat a little bit more stuff. Like, use it as the opportunity to say, actually, I'm going to fuel myself a little bit more here. And use it a little bit more as sporting performance rather than trying to tell me what you think you should eat because you want to lose weight, maybe. Also the other one. So, generally, if you would look at what you're having around, look at, am I having enough first?
Yeah.
And then look at what specifically am I having. Would probably be a good way of doing it.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. What we're saying is the more you'll have during the rounds, you're probably taking off a few hundred calories either side of that round by making better decisions. Yep. So.
Just one final note also on caffeine. Favorite subject of mine was the basis of my research at university. And a general rule for what I go with for caffeine is just try to have the same amount of caffeine as you would have normally.
100%.
Because your caffeine tolerance and your caffeine... your like habitual levels quite sensitive, actually. Like, if you don't have the same amount of caffeine one day to the next, like, your body is quite sensitive to that. So if you are someone who usually has two coffees a day, have your two coffees. Don't suddenly up it to three coffees because you're gonna go out and play and do whatever. Just try and be as habitual with your caffeine intake as possible.
Interesting. So I'm gonna pick your brain quickly. I know this we're kind of going off topic here because I didn't know that's what you did as your study there. Have you heard that about waiting a certain amount of time before you wake up to have any caffeine?
I've not seen that. I think that research came out more recently than when I was doing this. It was like 10 years ago. But also the research I did on caffeine was not to do with the feeling of being tired as caffeine in response. It was more to do with the sporting performance side of it. But we definitely had to look at people's habitual levels. Because if, for example, if we were to try and make an intervention with caffeine, we had to really consider that that intervention wasn't affecting what their current habitual levels were. So we basically had to wean people off caffeine, and they had to have no caffeine for 2 weeks before we could actually then start the trial with using caffeine as an intervention. But that's why it's so important that you try and maintain your levels, because it's actually, it takes a long time for you to wean off that current level.
And then follow up question to that. So then, did you see a drop in performance for these in these subjects for changing the habitual levels?
So again,
they were to having more or less, say.
So that would happen. It's not what we tested directly, because we weaned them off and then started the test once they were weaned off. So we could use it as an intervention rather than as a removal, if that makes sense. But the intervention we introduced, which was basically training with or without caffeine, with caffeine, you definitely have better muscular endurance. But muscular power doesn't change.
Yes.
So brute force power doesn't necessarily change. That brute force power is so ingrained into like your stimulus that if you can basically hype yourself up enough in your mind to do it, then it's there. That brute force doesn't leave, but muscular endurance does alter.
Yeah. So just to break that down for you guys, muscular endurance isn't something we really need for golf, but that power that Joe's talking about is something we use. So the caffeine.
Yeah. So like to put it into context, well, actually the study we did was a bench press test, one of them. So someone's maximal bench press power, they're like pretty much at one rep max, but we also measured the speed that they lifted it out as well. Didn't really change, but whether they could do 15 repetitions or 16 repetitions or 17 repetitions, that number changed. So longer period. So if you want to go to the gym and you want to lift more, caffeine is a great stimulant for that. In the same way that if you used to having caffeine and then you remove that caffeine, you have the opposite effect and you probably won't be able to do as much from that way. But for example, if you're feeling tired and you haven't had your caffeine, whatever, if we just suddenly ramped you up and got you warm and then got you to have a one-off swing as hard as you possibly can, you probably could get pretty similar to your max. Whether you'll be able to do that consistently for 4 hours.
Yes, it's a different case. Yeah.
And that's what we spoke before about that loop. So
yeah,
a little bit of geeking out for people, but yeah, we like
to play a little bit of a tangent there, I like that.
Cool.
Lovely.
Right. Sam, what we got planned for the next few weeks for people's topics, what can we bang out, because we're feeling like we're covering a decent chunk of main topics now. I think we're probably going to start to filter down a little bit into tangents. I would like to do 100%, I'd like to do an episode on muscle building. How we build muscle, training to build muscle, because as we move more into the winter, I think this will become more of a topic for people. So I think that would be an interesting one to do.
Absolutely.
Any other topics that come to mind for you?
So there's a really interesting study that I read this week, and it was the physical attributes and how they contribute to club head speed. So they've ranked from attributes like mobility, jump height, jump peak force, explosive lower body strength, upper body strength, and to see what number one correlates with club head speed.
Nice. It's a
fascinating study. I'd love to break that down with you and hear your thoughts on that. There's a really interesting blog that I've written out that's coming out on Monday about that. But to talk about that, I think would be really fascinating. Muscle, absolutely. Something I'm massively into and work a lot with clients on that. Trying to think if there's anything
else. What might be quite fun then, because we're getting to a point now in golf where we're getting more research come out.
Absolutely.
Becoming more popular. But you know, when a sport becomes more popular, there becomes more funding, which means the universities can fund to do more research, right? That's where this people don't get paid to do research. So there always has to be funding, there always has to be a need for it in universities for it to come out. So maybe we can start to go through some of these research papers coming out.
Studies,
we'll pick them out. We'll try and translate that into what that actually means for people.
For general population, 100%.
You know, for example, for this study, I've not seen it. I'll have a read. But you know, are we just saying that people who have stronger legs swing the golf club faster, or are we saying that getting your legs stronger allows you to swing the golf club faster? There's a big difference there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So chances are, people that swing the golf club faster have probably trained to swing the golf club faster, which means they've probably got stronger legs because they've been training the golf club. So we'll start to dig down into some of this research and maybe make it mean something for the listeners and actually say, okay,
and how you can apply it to how you can apply it to your training.
Exactly. Even going back to some of the research from 10, 15 years ago of basic strength training, you know, what they did, how that worked, and what the result was, and we can start to break that down and what that actually means for you guys out there. You can start to apply this. So that might be quite fun. Maybe we'll do a little bit of a series on that.
That'd be good.
Yeah, we can maybe do 3 or 4 episodes on covering some different topics on the research that's out there.
And then once again, guys, if you do have any topics, any suggestions, anything you'd like us to kind of have a chat about or do some research on, send them in. You can find me at Sam_MacroGolf on Instagram. Joe?
Yep, Joe_MacroGolf on Instagram. It's probably the best place to get in contact with us. And obviously don't forget, you can sign up for a free trial for the MacroGolf app, of course. So we've actually got some information on nutrition in the app. And you guys can download the app, get your free trial, 7 days for free. And then you can use the code podcast10 as well, and it'll give you 10% if you do decide to continue and sign up to the app.
Awesome. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Guys, thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.